Hey guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't pretend life didn't hit us. We talk about what we did after it did. Because the truth is everybody loves a comeback story, but nobody talks about what it actually takes to rebuild. The doubt, the setbacks, the moments where you're not sure you're going to make it. And some people stay stuck in what happened to them. Some people decide this is not where it ends. And I'm just going to tell you guys, God doesn't waste pain. He uses it to shape you, to strengthen you, to give you something that actually matters. So if you've ever had to rebuild yourself, this conversation's really going to speak to you. Today's guest is Dorothy O'Dell, speaker and founder, helping people turn adversity into something that actually moves their life forward. Dorothy, thank you so much for coming in the hot seat today. I launch everybody from this question. Give us your elevator pitch. Who are you? What do you do? And what makes you special?
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
So I'm D Dorothy O'Dell. I like to consider myself the impact catalyst. I grew up in a very loving home. However, it was truly chaotic. My parents were chronically ill. I went from that to being bullied all through school. I had extreme low self-esteem. So f the first guy that said he loved me, I believed it, which turned into a 4-year nightmare. So getting through that, we also had my uncle took his life Christmas Day about 30 years ago. And so life has just been putting one foot in front of the other. No stranger to adversity, like you said, wrote my book, The Overcomer, Facing Challenges with Faith and Courage, so that people would say, hey, wait a minute, if she can do it, so can I. And just really bringing that message of hope to everybody. And then I fell in love with the veteran space. And now I am a veteran ally, amongst other things. And yeah, just really here to give people hope and to encourage them never to give up. Just keep putting that foot in front of the other.
So overcoming that adversity, a lot of people stay stuck in like their childhood was rough, their parents didn't teach them, and all these things, and like it's excuse stacked up on excuse. I would say the first thing people don't realize is like maybe you didn't have a lot of say in how you grew up, but as an adult, you get to choose now what comes next, and you can only blame those struggles for so long, right?
Amen to that. And what I had to really learn was our parents are doing the best that they knew with what they had. So, maybe they didn't grow up in a great environment. This wasn't the case for my parents, but I'm just saying, they grew up with different ideals. And, back when my dad was growing up, he was the oldest of five. My fa grandfather had to work three jobs just to put food on the table. So, as you can imagine, now being the oldest, you are the example for the rest of them. So don't mess up, right? And if you messed up, you heard about it, right? Because you're the example. And so, that built a lot of character within my dad, and that strong, work ethic, which brought down to us. And it's funny, before he died, we had a conversation with him, and I said, did you even realize that basically in our household, work was love, and that's how you showed your love? And he goes, there's no way. I goes, yeah, Dad, that's how it was. And they had no idea. And I mean, growing up in that, you don't think that anything's different. That's what you think is normal until you listen to other kids, and they're like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't normal. But I mean, it was a great house. We knew we were loved, but it was like a tough love, right? These kids today could not have grown up in my household.
No, that's what I'm saying. And my older kids, I'm not saying it's funny what they say, but we went through a moment where they were like trauma. Everything was trauma. I was a very and we did have a rough couple of years. I went through a divorce. It was terrible, right? I was not a good mom. I was inside myself. I was drinking a lot. It was very toxic. But looking back at like who I still was in that moment, like, they're not going to see that now. But I'm thinking, man, you guys have no like I know what it was like to grow up with the trauma, and to not have a parent that was actually there. So yeah, I think our childhood was very different. And men, ideally, I mean, that work ethic is their love language. I mean, they're carrying the pressure of like providing for a household, even with my husband. You know, that is how he's loving us right now. We're in the season of what's the best thing? Mom stays home, so dad's working 60 hours a week to provide for the, six of us that are still home, So it's definitely those seasons. What do you think was the hardest season that you've had to walk through, Dorothy?
I've had some doozies. I would have to say, watching my dad die of cancer in front of my eyes, like literally the last 9 days of his life, is something that happened 5 years ago. Well, September will be 5 years, and I still just I don't even have to close my eyes to visualize that, right? And your hero, my dad was my hero. I would call my dad on my way home from work every night, I say, hey, how you doing? Bounce things off him. It's funny, he was the hard ass, but he was also the one that you go to, right? And so we knew my dad loved us. There was absolutely no question about it. My mom too. But my dad, we just had this relationship. You could talk to my dad about everything and anything. And I just miss those conversations. I miss that. And just watching your hero and your rock just disintegrate in front of you, I would say probably has been one of the hardest. And homes, not really homeschooling, but being at home with my stepson during COVID, that those would be the top two.
That's so funny. I can relate to that part of it. But I'm a homeschool mom full time, so it's
God.
pre-COVID
God
all the
bless
way. Yeah,
you.
we did. And it's not always easy, but it's definitely for me. I'm thank God for that, truly. But no, I couldn't imagine. And your dad being that strength and being the provider, and to see him, at his highest point and his lowest point, I can't imagine what that made you feel like, even about our human experience and about life. Like, he was that strong, hard ass work ethic. Like, we're gonna do the things. And then, I don't think that people dying of cancer is anything that anyone is really unfamiliar with. Maybe we've not experienced it, but we know how what it does to a person. So what does that make you feel like about just your life experience and humanity and your perspective?
My perspective on life is really changed actually since he died. It is life is way too short. He died at 69. That I mean
Oh,
he
he's
lived a good
young.
life, but that is young in today's standards. And it's funny because I also have a podcast too, and I never thought that I would be any center of attention at all. That's not how we were raised. My parents didn't want to be a part of any attention. When I wrote the book, he was shocked. And then when I went to go do stuff like that, he's just like, what in the world? Like, why would my daughter do this? Right. And so he didn't understand. He supported, obviously. But with him dying, it's just life is too short. Do what you want to do. Don't stay in a dead-end relationship or a dead-end job, because it provides, life can sometimes be hard. So choose your hard. You know, what's harder? Being in a relationship that you weren't meant to be in, or having the give yourself a year to get over it, right? But just really not settling is basically, I got that from his time, like watching him that the last year of his life. And it's funny because that's not how I was raised, but that is what I got out of that experience. Because it's you could be here today, gone tomorrow. And I think we've all had, I don't know of anybody that cancer hasn't affected them in some way, whether person they know in their immediate family or a friend or family member. And cancer is that. It basically eats you from the inside out. And watching that is traumatic. But yeah.
And I mean, yes, it is probably one of the worst experiences to watch someone you love to go through, because you're helpless. You're
Yes.
helpless, and the person you're going to for strength, they're in it, and I just, feel like the world is imploding. I'm sure you spent time in survival mode, a lot of
Most
time
of
in
my
that area.
life.
What does that feel like? And when what was your wake up call of like, I can't stay here. I can't keep living like this. Like I'm killing myself in survival mode.
Right. I would have to say the very first time I actually kind of put a term survival mode on that is I was at the tail end of my abusive relationship that I had been in for 4 years. It was verbal and mental, right? It was like
Yeah.
coming home to Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. I had no idea who I was going to get that night.
Oh.
And I said to a girlfriend, it was a mutual friend, I said, I just wish he would hit me. Because if he hit me,
It's
then I
easier.
would just deck him and I'd be gone.
I've
Like,
said that.
I was just like, I
Yeah.
just really wish he would hit me. Because you don't know, because they have you thinking, well, oh, it's just you, right? If you wouldn't have done this, then I wouldn't have said that, right? And then you got to thinking, am I just this horrible person? With the mind games. And but when his son went to his mom and said, Dad's doing some pretty horrible things to Dorothy. And then she confronted me and said, hey, are you okay? I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's just like, well, the son said, that you and her ex were getting into arguments. I won't say his name, but I'm just like, I had to take a step back and think. I'm like, well, if a kid can see it, because I refuse to argue in front of a child, like if he started, I would just back away, type thing.
Kids know.
And they know, they know. And I was just like, but again, he had me believing some things within that relationship too. So I was just like, whatever. And then I really realized I was exhausted. My blood pressure was so high at one point between that relationship and the job that I was in. My doctor says if it was like 174 over 138, he says, if you don't do something about this now, you're going to stroke out. And I could just remember, it's funny you said God uses everything, and it's 100% true. He was laid off, and I was the only one working at the time supporting us. And everybody's just like, leave him, leave him, leave him. But I'm like, you can't, if you were married, you can't just leave your husband because he doesn't have a job, right? That's just not something you do, right? And so we were in Walmart, of all places. And we were with friends, and he was a gamer. And so he wanted this Guitar Hero. And I said, no, we can't afford it. You're not working. There's no way. And that was the very first time I put my foot down, and he didn't like it. And I said, if you ask me one more time, I'm getting out of here. And it's like God was in front of me. And there was this veil in front of me, and it split from the left to the right. And that moment forward, I'm like, I need to get out of this relationship. I need to move forward. If I don't get out of it, it's either the relationship's going to kill me, or something
I'm
drastic is
going to
going to happen,
prison.
or I'm going to prison. And it's funny because I hid all that from my parents, right? I hid that from everybody. And because you feel ashamed, you're like, no, this can't happen to me, right? And so you're just, and I didn't realize how exhausted I was, and just how much you just keep putting that foot in front of the other. You don't even realize it. It's like your tunnel vision. You're in your zone, so to speak, and you don't see a way out until God reveals the way out. And it was just like, that I think happened, I want to say October, and my freedom day was November 4th of that same year. I decided, enough was enough, and I got out of there. And it's funny because I was talking to our mutual friends, and I said, I got to get out of here, and they begged me not to. I was just gonna pack my stuff and
Go.
I would be gone by the time he came home one day. And they said, please don't do that. That happened with his past relationship. He didn't take it easy. And I'm like, well, that's not my problem.
Not your problem.
Really? Not my problem. You want to sit in the middle of a highway? Like, that's not my problem. But then I had also had experienced a family member complete suicide. So I knew I didn't want that to happen, but I wouldn't have taken the ownership of it, right? And so I just all the things that I thought that would be a problem, it's funny because it just cleared up. I'm like, everything was on my name. So I said, I'm going down to the utility commission. I'm either you give me a blank check to put it over in your name, or I'm just canceling everything and you could pay
And you're
activation
out.
fees. And honest to God, he gave me a blank check, a void check to give it to them. And I'm just like, so every problem that I thought that
Just worked
of
out.
stopping me from going, it just everything cleared up. I had my family there within a week getting my stuff out. Had to move back home, but like it didn't matter. Like I needed to get out. And when you walk in such tremendous brain fog that you can't even think, that's that I think that was my key to like, okay, you're in survival mode, get out. So
I think a lot of women get that same chance, or even men too. Men are in abusive relationships. I'm not trying to demean that in any way, but why do you think? Because I think a lot of people have that God moment. I think they get that chance and they still stay stuck in what they've been through. So what do you think the difference is for the people that really listen to that opportunity and the people that are still just in it right now?
they A don't think they can get anything better, or B they're so fearful of the unknown that they are just stuck. I also worked in a women's shelter for a little bit. I was in the office, but I would see these women coming in like arms in a sling, bruised and battered, and I'm like, what? Like, and some of these women had been, this would be like the third or fourth time that this has happened to them. Like, we put them through the system, we get them the help they need, we get them a new housing, relocate some of them if we have to, if the situation is dire, but they keep going back. And I think they keep going back because they just don't have enough faith in themselves, let alone in a higher power. And they just don't see that they can do it, right? Oh, I'm not strong enough. Well, let me tell you, you're strong enough, and God put you here for a reason. And that reason wasn't to be abused or to be battered or to be mentally so exhausted that you don't even know your own name.
That's the point where I
So.
wish I could just tell I wish everybody just knew Jesus, 'cause like, girl, I'll never have enough faith in myself to do anything ever. It is him calling me to this, and it's my faith in him that ever moves that. I'm nothing, we're kind of nothing, and I totally get that. I just finding that outside source. Tell me about your renewed framework. What is that? Tell me about that in real life.
So, ironically enough, okay, so I wrote the first book and then I wrote like the Overcomer Playbook, right? So, 7 steps that I used to go from surviving to thriving, right? And then I thought, well, the playbook is like a spin-off of football, which is more for men. But then I thought, let's just rename all this and called it Renewed, right? And so it is still 7 steps, but it's taking you from, so I'll just share what Renewed stands for. So it stands for reflect on what you truly want, evaluate your now versus your next, name what's holding you back, examine your beliefs, work your self-care program, which story for that one's huge, enjoying life again and doing good. I believe in giving back no matter what, right? We all go through cycles, and sometimes we need help, but then we always, I believe, at the end of that cycle of, getting healed, that you should give back, right? And so I grew up being the world's biggest people pleaser and really identifying that I put everybody ahead of myself, and I did that until my dad got cancer. So for 40 years, I put everybody above myself. I was the last person on the totem pole. And when my dad got cancer, we were allowed a social worker if we wanted. And so her first question was, is what is your self-care program like? I'm like, I laughed in her face and I said,
And
what are
you're
you
like,
talking about? I'm like, that doesn't exist. And so I spilt 40 years worth of traumatic events at her feet. And she goes, like, if you don't start taking care of yourself, you're going to die of cancer, or you're going to die of a heart attack before your dad dies of cancer. And that's when I took like a good solid look, because I had just gotten engaged. I was a late bloomer there, just gotten engaged. My dad just got diagnosed with cancer. I work in a very high stress industry. Like I had everything, all the stress components you could possibly think of. And the last possible thing was putting me first. And so she gave me obviously some homework to do. And I would say I'll be 50 this year. So that's 10 years of healing that past stuff, even though, and what do you think you are healed? It's like healing's like an
Same.
onion. It's another layer. It's another layer. It's another layer. I don't think until God brings us home that we are not working on ourselves, right? And so doing something for yourself is not selfish. And I know that especially if you grew up in my era, I had a grandmother who was like, take care of your man, you know, always make sure that he's provided for. And it didn't matter at what expense to yourself. And I took that as gospel until one day I was just like, I can't do this anymore. Like, and I started asking for help. And I truly great in a way, my dad's getting cancer was a godsend, because, you know, I was able to get that gift of learning all about self-care and things like that. But yeah, it's truly a necessity of life.
Do you remember, like, do you by chance remember your first homework assignment? Do you remember something that she told you to do that you were probably sitting there like, this is bullshit. Like, there's no way.
Breathing, believe it or
Yes.
not,
That's a
breathing.
good one.
I and it sounds so stupid, but I actually had an appointment at a heart specialist and they said, take a deep breath. And so I did. And he goes, from your diaphragm. Do you not know? Like from your diaphragm? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I like it's a breath. And so I could remember then like the box, there's box breathing, and then there's like 10 different kinds of breathing, and I'm like, I don't know, like inhale, exhale. That's what I can say. Up until 40 years old, I must have just been shallow breathing or just like
Everyone
whatever,
is.
because like the movie Waiting to Exhale is really like taking a deep breath, right? And I never even thought about it until like the breathing assignment. And I'm like, well, doesn't everybody breathe? But it's more than that, right? I just can't describe it. It's who knew there was more to life than just like taking a shallow breath?
That's what I'm saying. And it's, on my flagship show, it's something I talk about all the time, like breathe. And sometimes randomly I'll just be like, you guys, really in through your nose, really deep, and out through your nose. Like, people don't even just mouth breathing. Mouth breathing is terrible, So it's so funny. But yeah, breathing is usually the one that people are like, this is stupid. Are you serious? Like, why breathe, But self-care, I think, too, is such an important conversation, especially when women are, the caretakers. And it's not the I'm gonna go get my nails done. Like that version of self-care, like you guys, if you're watching on YouTube, my nails are done. That is my reward. It's not a self-care. That was like, I'm putting in work. I'm on a calorie deficit. I'm hitting protein goals. I'm working out. Like, that's my reward. It's not a self-care. That self-care for me to be able to take care of my husband, because I do think that's important. He's working 60 hours a week. How can I show up for him? I can't show up for him if I don't show up for myself. So I have a very, very strict morning routine where I'm filling my cup, that thing that makes me whole, and that's, you guys, that's what self-care is. And for me, it's like reading the Bible. I have a Velcro cat that I adore, and that's my time with her where I'm awake and we're together, and a workout, little things. But on the days I don't do that, my cup isn't full and I can't give to everybody. I can't run the whole household. So I, that self-care absolutely is very important. Like, taking that time to unplug, just time for yourself to breathe, or even just like sitting in a quiet room. Moms, when's the last time you done that? Just sat in a quiet room. It's, I think people just kind of either misunderstand the idea of self-care, and they think it's like, oh, Dorothy, let's go do a spa day. Like, yeah, that's cool, but you can't go to the spa every day, right? You need sustainable everyday things to take care of yourself. Where do people really self-sabotage when they're trying to rebuild their life?
I think people like will get so far and then they're like, Oh, well, I've arrived, but you really haven't, right? You just really haven't. Or they'll get like a couple wins and think life is great, and then they go right back to the same things that, I mean, I'm guilty of that consistently, whether that be with my weight or with my business or things like that, you know. And I really one thing that I've really had to work on was the worthy aspect.
Oh,
You
yes.
have to be, you have to know you're worthy of it, because my old tape was, you know, I'm not worthy of this. You know, I don't know. I don't know why I felt like I was such a bad person, not to be able to be worthy of taking an hour of my day to go work out.
Yeah.
But it's truly the crap that we tell ourselves about ourselves. It's like, you wouldn't say that about your worst enemy, but
No.
yet you think that about yourself. And why is that?
Yeah.
Right. And so I think, you know, they get a little bit of traction, and then that whole, those limiting beliefs, like the worthiness, or the, oh, you know, I really can't do this, or I can't figure this out. I think that's what comes to the forefront, and
Yeah.
people just, they'll sabotage themselves because they don't think they're worthy of it.
Yeah. I still catch myself in those moments, right? Like I'm having these great results and I catch myself like, "Whoa, what are we doing?" It's like I'm trying to blow it all up because I think, nope, like you don't, this isn't who you are. Who are you going to be? Like, what's going to come with this? And I think, you know, just we're born into a world of sin in the first place, so that's going to be something we all have to overcome is that ugly voice in our head, because I don't know anybody that doesn't have it. And if they say they don't, you know, I'd like to say that they're full of shit, because everybody's got that little voice of like, you're not enough. This is too scary. I mean, and ideally, what is it? It's our brain trying to protect us, you know, like this is scary. It's just better if you're quiet and seen and not heard and all that jazz. Switch gears a little bit. You're working with veterans. How did that happen? And what are the unique challenges that they're facing?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, ironically, a little backstory. So, I've always been in, I didn't even think about it, but I've always been within the military background. My dad's baby brother was in the Canadian Armed Forces. My great grandfather served in the Navy. And a lot of my cousins were either in cadets or active duty in the military. So, growing up, going to the Legion with grandpa on Friday night was like,
That's
that
the
was our
thing.
thing. But I didn't even really think about it, because to me that was just life, right? Didn't think of the sacrifices. My uncle was an administrator, so in the Canadian Armed Forces, so it wasn't like he ever saw active duty. Not to minimize his service, but he was never on the front, on the front lines. So when I started my show up about 5 years, I had a gentleman came on by the name of Greg Bicknell, 28-year Air Force veteran, and shared his struggles of, he ended up getting a TBI, traumatic brain injury, while in service, and that imploded his mental health to the point where he had attempted suicide 3 times. Finally, after the third time, he decided he was going to go and ask for help. He was told to make an appointment. Anybody who knows Greg knows that that lit a fire under his ass so hard. He thought, man, if I've been in the service for 28 years and I'm getting this treatment, what is my fellow comrades going through, right? And so he started a mission. He started his own nonprofit to help veterans with their mental health and things like that. So I sat on, long story short, I sat on his board for a couple of years, where, and then he started introducing me to more and more veterans. And when I found out the 22 veterans a day were dying by suicide, I knew that that needed to stop, and I knew I wanted to be part of this solution instead of the problem. I had said earlier that my uncle had completed suicide. That was a different uncle, my middle uncle on my dad's side. He was not in service, but I'm thinking, man, you know, I know what it's like to lose somebody that way. There's so many questions. No one has answers. You don't really know what happened. But if somebody who signed on the dotted line to defend their country, and you can't get them the help that they need, like, to me, that was that's sad. And so for the last 4.5 years, I've been interviewing men and women who have served, who still currently serve, first responders as well, and just noticing that there's an 85 to 90% divorce rate among our first responders and veterans. So that obviously adds to the mental health aspect of it. Transitioning is huge for our men and women. You know, how can we do a better job at helping them to transition from being in the military world to civilian life? Because that is a huge part too. Like, I just interviewed a Silver Sister who lost her brother. He had done two tours in Afghanistan and lost her brother to suicide back in, I think, 2021 or 2022. And she told me, like, her story is absolutely, it keeps me up at night, some of these stories, right?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Thinking that they're trained to kill, but why are they not trained to, I'm not saying get over it, but like
Yeah.
if you're trained to kill, like how do you train your mind to not let that affect you, right? There's got to be more training and more help on the inside, you know? And then there's survivor's guilt, right? Like you saw your brother or sister being blown up beside you, but yet you're able to come home. So all of this is what they face, let alone if they've been in combat, injured, things like that. And some guys, like I've interviewed diplomats, so hearing their stories are absolutely incredible. But the main piece is the mental health aspect, right? And so helping these men and women get the help that they need so that they're not in survival mode, that they come home and, you know, they're actually talking and instead of just being a shell of the person that they once were. So those are the things that they face. And I don't care if they're American or Canadian, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to help those who need help, right? And so it's military's always been a part of my upbringing. And so, like, to me, like, why would you not help them?
No, I
So,
love
yeah.
that. And I think in the United States, I'd say one of our biggest, one of the things that is just shameful and embarrassing is how we treat our vets. Like it just shows how broken the system really is in that, we train them and then they're not taken care of. In fact, they're on the bottom of the totem pole in the United States, and I love when I hear that people like you are standing up for that because there is such an incredible need for more people like you to help them process through and all of us, like if the whole world could just take a beat and think about what these guys really do, whether or not we believe in what they're fighting for or who they're fighting for, whatever that is, okay, whatever got them to that point, at the end of the day, our United States military is fighting for the United States. Again, not here to decide if it's what you believe. Like they wholeheartedly signed up for a service that they believe in and that they care about. And how do we take care of them after that? Because they're doing that for us. We wouldn't be the United States had we not had a military that lost their mind for us, literally. So yeah, it's I love the work that you're doing there. And we are coming up on our time. This conversation went so fast, and I'm like, wow, we could talk all day. I'm sure, Dorothy, we could have a million conversations. I want you to talk to the listener right now who is here, and they really just feel like giving up. What would you say to them right now?
I would say do not make a snap decision for a long-term solution. You know, those reach out for help. It's 988, both on the Canadian and the American side. Call, like, if you're at that point where, you know, life is just, you're done with it, and you think, you know, I've whatever that you've done that you can't come back from, just decide to reach out for somebody. So that whether that's 988, whether that's a friend, have people around you that you know that can support you no matter what. That was, it's funny, I never had friends growing up, but I developed a tribe of women around me just before my dad died. And without them, I know I would not be where I'm at today. So just finding your people, and it doesn't have to be like a whole group of people. If you're a veteran, Fridays at noon Eastern Standard Time, we have a free call. It's the best hour of my week.
Love
You know, we
that.
sit there, camaraderie, connection, and community. It is a free call for veterans and first responders and allies. So, you know, if you're interested in that, get a hold of me. But just, do not take those steps in a quick minute decision where you think life is too hard. Grab a book, do something, grab a friend, whatever it takes to get you through. And I promise you, I've been in those deep, dark moments before myself where I literally had to breathe deep, like for at least until I could just go to sleep, right? Once I was asleep, I was fine. But in those moments, it was so dark that I had to do whatever I had to do to focus on that. So please, whatever you do, just reach out to somebody for help. And there is hope. No matter where, you just got to find it.
I agree. I had a great guest the other day that said, just one more day. Tell
Yes.
yourself today, like one more day, one more day. One more day. How can people
One
get
more.
resourced with you? I will share links in the show notes. So I think the vet call, if you put that in there, it's in there, you guys.
Yeah. People can reach out to me, LinkedIn, Facebook. Facebook is usually where I hang out, LinkedIn as well, and definitely our website. There we go, unstoppableovercomers.com. Go check us out and just, say, hey, I saw you on the show and just wanted to say hey. Or if you are a veteran and you need some resources, there's actually one of my very dear friends who's a veteran. He's 80 years old. Paul Curtis, amazing guy, gave me a list of resources for veterans. So it is up on my website as well. So, find a resource on there if you're a veteran or first responder as well.
I love that. Dorothy, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special for whatever that's worth. And it's not just that you've been through the hard things, it's that you didn't stay there. You took what could have kept you stuck and you turned it into something that actually helps other people move forward. You made your mess your message and you made it mean something big. And now you're showing people that they don't have to stay in survival mode. You are helping a system that can't help itself right now and helping, our military to kind of find their way back. I think you are stewarding an incredible calling. I love that God has blessed your life and brought you to this moment. And I pray for everybody that you can reach and can touch. You embody leadership for sure. And I think that makes you incredibly special. For you guys listening, what you've been through matters, but it doesn't get to define you. God didn't bring you through everything you faced just for you to stay stuck in the bullshit. You are meant to rise, you're meant to build, and you get to become stronger because of it. To be resilient, to be intentional. And please, you guys, remember your mess is your message. Even the pain, even the setbacks, even the seasons where you didn't know how you were going to make it. And that's where your voice is built. And if you've been filling that pool to use your voice, to share your story, to turn what you've lived into something that actually helps people, that's what I get to help you do. I'm going to help you take your story, your experience, and your truth and turn it into something that actually connects and creates impact, whether that's a podcast or something different. We move in the direction of you finding your voice and your potential so you can help people just like Dorothy is doing that. If this episode spoke to you, if you know someone that really needs this, if it spoke to you, please leave a review. Stars are super cute, but written review gets this up in the algorithm for other people to see it. And for now, in this moment, you know someone that Dorothy can't access without your help. So it's a very selfless thing to share this out with whomever you can. Okay, so please share it, maybe privately, put it on your socials, whatever that is. Help us reach whoever Dorothy needs access to today and whoever needs access to Dorothy. And for that, Dorothy, just, I mean, truly, God bless your work, your journey, your experience. I think, he's done great things with you, and I'm rooting for you, and I appreciate your time in the hot seat. If you guys are ready for the hot seat, come tell me what makes you special.
Thank you.